The views stated by the hosts of this podcast are opinion only and should not take the place of a qualified healthcare professional or mental health specialist. This podcast is for education and recreation. Welcome to Ask a Heck, a podcast about self-care and witchcraft in the modern world. I'm Leslie.
I'm Allison.
And we are asked questions every day in the work that we do within our community. And this podcast is a space for us where we can share our knowledge and experience as witches and healers. It's also a space where you, dear listener, can find inspiration and also feel empowered wherever you are on your journey. Hooray, hooray, hooray!
Hooray indeed!
This episode is sponsored by our supporters like Jacqueline, who has donated to our show through the Anchor app. Thank you, Jacqueline.
You're the best.
J. Allen Cross is a practicing folk witch living in the Pacific Northwest. He spends his time offering spiritual services, community healing, and assisting those experiencing troublesome hauntings.
Oh, I can't wait to get into the juicy, juicy stuff. All right, this is Allison coming in real fast, you lovely people, to let you know that we're still doing that beautiful promo code over on landspiritsalchemy.com. So if you love plant magic, if you love all the things green, please head on over to my shop's webpage, landspiritsalchemy.com, and at checkout, enter plant hag, and you will get 15% off anything, and I mean anything in the whole entire shop.
That's exciting.
Landspirits.com, promo code plant hag. We love you.
Yay.
Look at you with your fancy mic and everything.
Gosh.
Hey, I have upgraded since the last time we spoke.
Holy crap.
Oh, this is so exciting. So honored to have you back. And on such a wonderful occasion to really celebrate this contribution that you've brought to us, which is American Brujeria, modern Mexican-American folk magic. This just came out.
Yeah. Brand new book.
So we're here to talk about it, and we've got lots of questions for you. And I want to hear about your whole process. This is so exciting.
And I have to say, it's really nice to see you this time.
I know. I get to actually like see your faces and get to talk to you guys like this. This is so nice. It's nice to see both of you.
It's nice to see you too. A pleasure and an honor, my friend.
I'm going to feel like extra excited because I can see you and it just feels like a sleepover party. I don't know. I'm just having a really good time.
Exactly. I love that.
Congratulations on your new book. I cannot even imagine how it feels to be on the other side of it.
Yeah. There's and a how whole lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I know everyone's abuzz about it and a Twitter, if you will. And yeah, it's so super cool to see all these amazing people supporting you and your work and rightfully so, frankly, because you're fucking brilliant. So,
do you know what I think is really cool too, is all of these modern writers and contributors that, you know, are bringing these incredible offerings to us. And it's not like when I was a teenager growing up and I was, you know, wondering who Scott Cunningham was, or, you know, like, it's like, we get to see you and we get to talk to you and you're here. And it just feels so present. And I just love that there are so many witches in this community, so many practitioners in this community that are able to share this knowledge.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely agree. And it is interesting because a lot of people do really feel like they know me. And so like growing up, you know, getting books from these authors, you had no idea who this person was. They were just a name on a book and that was that. But now it's like you're familiar with who we are, and then you get to hear our books and our words and things like that. And it's a bit of a whole new world when it comes to publishing books these days.
And too, as I was reading, I could just sort of feel immersed in, and of course I know nothing of what it you know, the incredible mountain it is to climb to write a book, but I just felt to me, it just felt so beautiful to have that all encapsulated in here. What was the process like for you? Are you an organized practitioner, or did you have to go through, like, do you have a grimoire? Did you have to go through post-it notes or just pull things out of your pensive? How did you...
Right. It was a major kind of brain dump of everything that I knew. But then, of course, going into the book, I then went and interviewed a bunch of people who were either immigrated from Mexico or had Mexican upbringings and the culture and things like that. And so it was a lot of me going through my notes of things that I asked people, what their responses were, their stories that they had told me that I had written down. And then it was me trying to find a way to sort of express their words through my book. So I really kind of started this book about me and the things that I knew, but it very quickly became about all of them. It very quickly became about my community and what they knew and their memories and their stories about, you know, what their mothers did or their uncles did or stories that they had been told growing up. So it very quickly shifted from being, you know, about what I know to being about all these other people who are kind of in the same demographic as me. So that was very neat to be able to incorporate them and their words and their wisdom into this book.
Oh, that's so cool. That's awesome. It's like you're shifting from personal gnosis to like collective community consciousness in a way. And how beautiful is it to be able to encapsulate all of that knowledge in one space, and then you get to share it with the world. And I just think that's so beautiful. I'm really happy to hear that you were able to connect with all those beautiful people.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And the response was so beautiful too, because, you know, and something I write about in the book too is feeling very much rejected from both sides of your culture. And so I was worried that when I went to go do these interviews to ask these questions of these people, that they would either turn me away or mock me and the project and things like that. But they really didn't. They were really excited to talk to me, and they really embraced me. And it was really funny too, because, you know, this is folk magic, which means that it's part of our daily lives. It's just kind of what we do. And so I'd sit down with people and I'd be like, okay, so this is what the book is about. And they'd be like, well, you got the wrong person. I don't do none of that brujeria. Like, no, like, and I'm like, no, just stay with me here. And I'd ask them something like, okay, let's just start with, you know, the basics. You know, did your family use Vicks vapor rub?
Right.
Oh. And they're like, oh yeah, of course. You know, my mom, she would, one person was telling me, they're like, yeah, my mom would do this thing where, like, they would take the Vicks and then they would mix it with their saliva and some salt, and then they'd apply it in the sign of the cross, and then they'd realize, they'd be like, that's magic. And I'm like, yes, that is magic. And then they'd be like, oh God. And then like all this other stuff would come out. They'd be like, but what about this and this and this? And then that was the one time that my aunt, she took an egg and she rubbed it on me and it took off something. I don't know. And then they'd get really excited. And then when they would run out of things to tell me, they'd call their older sister or their mother, or they'd bring their mother in to talk to me because they were like so stoked about it. And so seeing that excitement from the community and having them be so willing to put their voices into my work was so beautiful. I don't feel like I necessarily wrote this book so much as my community wrote it. And I was simply just kind of the facilitator of that.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
It's like the ancestors were just kind of like, okay, Joshua. We got you. Go in this direction. We got you. Go in this
direction. Yeah, I felt very guided through it.
So cool. Vicks. Let's talk about it. Can we talk about it?
Absolutely.
Let's just, why not?
I have to know. Like, did you really have it rubbed on your hands as a kid?
I did not, but a lot of my family members do remember that, because my great grandma Lena, God rest, unfortunately, I never got the chance to meet her. But a lot of my family has wonderful stories about her. But one of them is her undying love for Vicks vapor rub. And to cure everything. If you had a headache, she put it on your head. If you couldn't sleep, she'd put it on your eyelids, which I don't recommend. And of course, being a devoutly Catholic woman, part of going to bed at night with the children was to put Vicks on their hands and make sure that all hands were above the covers to discourage any exploration that one might have, because that's a no-no when you're Catholic. Yeah, but the Vicks vapor rub, it's so interesting. Somebody sent me an old advertisement for it, like way back in the day, because Vicks has been around for over 100 years. And the original ads for it were magical in nature. It was kind of advertised a little bit the way that we talk about Florida water, which mm-hmm. I thought was interesting, because mm-hmm. we don't think of it that way anymore. I mean, we do, but it's not like a part of its quote official purpose anymore. Sure. Yeah, but it still exists in our magic.
And you know what? It really does exist. Like, you know, I grew up with it, of course. Mm-hmm. My mother had it because her mother told her to do it. And my other grandmother had it. And she had it in so many forms as well. So it does. It feels like this, you know, passed down tradition, which you said, because of the camphor and eucalyptus.
Yeah.
Two very healing and protecting plants.
Yes. Absolutely.
My mind just got blown, man. That's fantastic. I love that.
You're gonna get some? You're gonna get some, Allison?
It's just, you know, anything that is so much a part of our like everyday lives, and you're like, oh my goodness, like I had no idea that it was supposed to do this originally, you know?
Right.
Are people using Vicks in folk magic as kind of as a protector, and then also like a conduit? Mm-hmm. It carries energy and things with it. So like the whole like spit thing, right? So you're adding spit to it to create like a familial connection for extra layer of protection.
Yes. So it's used kind of, and again, it really kind of depends on who you ask to, because a lot of this stuff varies from family to family, how they're going to handle it. But it's used, of course, kind of for its healing properties and its kind of protective properties. But also I was told stories too about people using it like on the walls of their homes to like make like crosses for protection and things like that. And a lot of times when people are doing like exorcism work or dispelling of negative energies or entities or things like that, they'll use camphor or eucalyptus, which is the kind of the main parts that gives Vicks vapor rub its scent and its kind of power that it has. So it's really not much of a leap between, you know, using these plants to using them in kind of a jelly form. And people too would use them like, I got all these stories too about their family members, especially the older family members that would straight up eat it, like a spoonful of it, or like stir it into like tea in the morning. Ooh. That's hardcore. Wow. I definitely don't recommend that to anybody who's listening, but yeah. So like, that's one of them. And I did at one point, and I've been struggling to remember who it was. I believe it was Luz Astral, on Instagram, taught at one point to infuse the Vicks, with, like herbs or things like that. And I've seen that in a few places where they melt it down so that it's warm, and then they put plants in it, which is interesting. And then they kind of strain it, though this is a very volatile process, because Vicks will burst into flame if it gets too warm. But yeah, so you know, even though it has some of these properties in it already, sometimes people will add things to it or just kind of sprinkle them in and then stir it in as well, was something that I had seen where people would add things to it. So it can be a base for so much more, but also at the same time, it's very powerful as is.
Fascinating. I love it.
I have a ton of questions. I've taken some notes. I've written some things down. Of course, I also follow you on TikTok and have really been loving your content on TikTok, mainly when you're addressing non-Mexicans or, you know, people that are like, well, I shouldn't buy this book because I'm a white person. And you really kind of, and what's nice is that you do it with humor, and you do it with, which I think that, at least for me, being such a giddy foot person all the time, just so goofy, I really respond and learn well through humor. So, and I know that you talk a little bit about that in your book too, how that this is acceptable for, you know, non-Mexican people to purchase.
Yeah, that was something that was very interesting that I ran into on TikTok early on when I posted a video that was like my favorite books on Mexican magic. And this was before mine had come out. And that post got a lot of hits very quickly. It blew up pretty fast. And I realized that the comments that were rolling in were mostly people going, and if you're white, don't touch these, don't look at these, don't buy these, don't read them. And I was so shocked because I was like, okay, like, are we supporting, you know, authors of color so much now that we've gone around the bend that we actually are not allowed to support them? Like, that was a very odd thing to run into. And I very much encourage people to learn about other cultures, because learning about other cultures is not cultural appropriation, it's education, right? And it's actually been shown that the more we learn about other people's cultures, the less likely we are to be racist against them, because there is understanding there. So I very much encourage people to get books from the magic of other cultures, if nothing more than simply to try and understand each other. Like, I think that's so important. And I don't see anything bad in just learning about other cultures. And so if someone who is white, you know, reads my book, and the next day their friend comes over and is like, I was in the cemetery and I stepped on something that looks like a hex jar, and now I've broken out in hives and I can't breathe. And the only thing that they have is my book next to them and an egg in the fridge. I want them to use it. Nobody will be hurt in that. In fact, somebody will probably be helped in that. And there's no harm that comes from that, right? Where we kind of run into trouble is when we try to claim ownership of it, or try to become the face of it, or try to change it in some way or the other. That's when we run into trouble. And it was really important for me that, you know, I know that whenever you put out a book like this, you know, for simple marketing purposes and the survival of the book, you're supposed to say, this is for everyone, right? But I also wanted to add kind of a caveat to that and say, like, yes, this is for everyone. However, you know, we need to have a conversation about this. And so in the book, I have a whole section on, you know, if you are approaching this work from outside of the community, here are some guidelines that I want you to adhere to. Because so many people too right now are so confused on what is appropriation, what is not appropriation. I've had people call me and tell me that they're like, yeah, like, I'm trying to be a better person. I'm so sad that I can no longer have a margarita ever again in my life because those are from Mexican culture. And I'm like, wait, what are you talking about? You can still have a margarita. That's totally fine. So I wanted to kind of clear that up for a lot of people, because there's a lot of fear right now of going anywhere near something like this and committing the horrid capital A appropriation. And so I wanted to kind of break it down for people so that they would know kind of where these lines are, what's okay, what's not okay. So I walk people through that, kind of starting with, you know, talking about your relationship with the community. You know, are you supporting the Latino community? You know, are you, you know, with your words and your votes and how you spend your money? And then I go into kind of a breakdown of three questions to ask yourself. You know, does it make me money? Does it take up space? And does it erase culture? And if you can say no to all three of those, then you're probably good. You know, so it's like, you know, buying a dream catcher from a native person is not cultural appropriation, you know, even if you go home and use it for its intended purpose. But opening an Etsy selling your dream catchers that you've made as a non-native person is cultural appropriation, you know? So finding out where those lines are is important when we go to handle these works.
Mm-hmm. You make it so simple. And I so much appreciate that, because you're right. There are tons of people out there that are just so afraid of making another mistake.
Yeah.
And the thing is that we're always going to make mistakes, but the point is to learn from it. Mm-hmm. And be gentle with yourself, of course.
Yeah.
And it is simple, you know, it's just about being honorable and respectful.
Absolutely. And I definitely got the sense that some of these people had really had folks be very mean to them. I had people message me that are like, I'm from Mexico. My entire family is Mexican, but I'm light skinned. So I was told that I can't go anywhere near this. And I'm like, oh, honey, no, like, I'm so sorry that somebody told you that. Or they're like, you know, like, I'm first generation, but my parents never taught me Spanish. And I was told that now I'm an abomination because I don't remember the language and that I can't do this. And I'm like, I am so sorry. Like, no, like this is for you too. Or people who are like, I'm only 60% Mexican. And I'm like, that's like the majority of you. like, come read this book. Like, the healing needs to commence.
You actually talked just very briefly about that in the beginning, and you did mention that in the beginning of the podcast too, the in-between. And then, you know, your experience with it, and then how it kind of translates metaphysically to the liminal space of in between as well. And I thought that was such a beautiful, like it makes that experience, it feels like it makes that experience more powerful.
Yes, absolutely. And it's something that I wanted to kind of flip the script on that, because so many of us feel so alone and so rejected and so disempowered by the fact that we are mixed or stuck in between. And as Mexican Americans, it's so hard because, you know, you grow up and you try to hang out with, like, you know, the white American kids, and you stick out really intensely. I got called all kinds of names. Everyone wants to be like, hey, can I tell you a Mexican joke? Like, I mean, it's just, it's not a fun way to grow up. But then again, you know, you kind of cross the school cafeteria or whatever and go to hang out with the quote unquote real Mexicans who are, you know, either first generation or have immigrated from Mexico. And you go to try and hang out with them and they're like, you're not a Mexican. And so you feel very stuck. And I always flash back to that scene in Selena where the dad is like, you know, we had to be more Mexican than the Mexicans and more American than the Americans to, like, prove that we are, you know, valid people. And it's so true, because you feel very rejected from either side. And I really wanted to take that idea and kind of shake people a little bit and be like, but this is important. Like, no, you're not that. And you're also not this. You are both and you are neither. And that becomes a liminal space. We are a bridge between, you know, our past as Mexicans and our future as Americans. And in this space where we exist in between, not only is that like a crossroads, which is so magically potent, like a liminal space, it's also an area where we have the ability to do a lot of healing between our communities, because we have to shift between both worlds almost constantly. And so we can kind of talk to both sides at the same time. So being that intermediate between the two is so important. And there's so much healing that can happen there.
Truly, truly a medium in the physical world and a medium in the spiritual world. It's a beautiful place to lie. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes.
I personally have never had a limpia done. And I know that it's such, like, almost like a foundational thing in this tradition.
Absolutely. So limpia is a practice where it's a cleansing practice. Limpia means to cleanse or to clean. When we do one of these, it's funny because a lot of times people think that there is one specific way we go about this, and there's really not, because depending on what it is that you're dealing with, what you're going through, what the divination says, things like that will all dictate what process we take when approaching you and your spirit. So for instance, like someone who has just kind of come in, you know, you will often start with something called pláticas, which is like a heart straightening talk. And this isn't something I necessarily go into the book because, well, let's be honest, books have word count limits and you have to kind of chop something somewhere. But a plática is like a heart straightening talk, as they say, or like, it's a little bit like confession, but it's less like, tell me what you've done wrong, and more, tell me what is weighing on you. What is making you heavy, or what is causing, like, sort of like a kink in your hose that is not letting things flow. And once we get people to sort of verbalize that, to actually speak it, then it comes out of them. It's an exorcism through a conversation. It's a little bit like talk therapy. And so we get people to actually say it, to speak it. And sometimes very intense things come out in a plática, things that they haven't told anybody else before. It just comes out. But once it comes out of them, like, the relief, you can see their body changes. You can feel the air around them change, that it's finally out. It's no longer inside of them anymore. And then from there, you know, depending on what you learn in that conversation you have with them, you might have a better idea of what you're going to do next. And when we do things like most of the types of limpias that we do, like with the egg, will also be divination as well. So after we kind of rub you down with the egg to collect whatever is on you, we can then crack it into a glass of water. And depending on what the egg does in the water, we can see, you know, what we had taken off of you. We can see what might still be hanging around. We can see how bad it was. And then from there, we can decide what we do next. from there, we can do all kinds of things. So there are things called bariras, which are sweeps. And the cleansing with the egg is technically part of that. Sometimes it's an egg. You can use a lemon or a lime. You can use an onion. You can use garlic. I have seen curanderas use plastic lemons and old boots. Really just kind of whatever you have on hand to just collect whatever is on you. But normally the one that people see a lot is it's done with the bundles of herbs or plants. And the ones that we choose for that are specific to what your needs are. So someone who's suffering from depression, we might use rosemary, but someone who has a hex on them, we might use rue or something like that. And then we also have a sahumerio, which is like incense burning, kind of smoke cleansing. And then there's baños, which are like spiritual baths that you normally kind of mix up in a bucket and kind of pour over somebody. So there's all kinds of different directions you can go with alimpia. And a lot of times people think that when you that getting, you know, alimpia is always just like someone charging you $500 to like shake a sage stick at you. And that's not, it's not how this works, because it's a more complicated process than that. And it kind of depends on, you know, what you find out from them and what the divinations say and things like that to where you go from there.
I love that you talk about when performing this, yeah, wearing red gloves.
Oh,
to protect yourself. Or wrapping your hands in red, or however, you know, you do that. And then the concept or the idea of like seeing a spider or scorpion, mm-hmm, or some kind of come into the egg or out of the egg, or, you know, of course, psychically, but have you experienced that? Or is that some of the information that you've received in some of the discussions with your community?
That actually did happen to me once. That was a firsthand account of that. So a little background on that. So when we do something like a barida, where we're kind of sweeping somebody down with something, whether it's like a lemon or a bundle of herbs or an egg, it's very, very common to have people wrap either red string or yarn or ribbon around their hand to kind of cover their palm. Sometimes people will wrap it around their wrist or do both. But the idea is that it acts as a barrier between the person's kind of ick that you're kind of scraping off of them and you, so it doesn't go up into your hand and then enter into your body. For the same reason, a lot of the times the bundles of herbs, we call it and the escoba, will be tied with red string to create a handle. And then the red string is above your hand, so that as the plants are coming in contact with them, it's not traveling up the plants then into your hand. So it just kind of forms a barrier. And one time I was, in fact, doing alimpia con huevo with a person and with the egg. And I was, you know, rubbing them down with it. I'm saying the prayer. And I get this sense. And you know, when I do this, I always see it kind of like they're full of black smoke. And as I'm rubbing them down, I'm kind of vacuuming it out of them with the egg. Mm-hmm. And as I'm doing this, I'm kind of going down their back. And then suddenly this crab spider thing sort of just like comes out of them and then into the egg. And I see this in my mind's eye. And I'm first very startled, but then I'm like, well, I'm glad that's no longer in them. And I'm really glad that I have my red string around my hand as well, just to make sure that it doesn't jump from, you know, the egg into me. That's kind of why we have that barrier there. So I like to make sure that we have that going on, because you never know what a person has on them. Like, you know, you might come in and be like, oh, it's fine. You know, I'm just going to rub you down with an egg and everything will be good. But once you kind of get into it, it might go much deeper. It might be a lot more intense. You don't know what kinds of spirits people have attached to them or curses on them or things like that. So it's always important when you do this work to make sure that you are protected, because you really never know until you're in there.
And it just jumps out and grabs you.
Sometimes it do.
Wow. That is, you said a lot of times it can really collect like in the back, mm-hmm, of that neck area as well.
Yeah, I tell people a lot when they're doing this work, as they're doing the sweeps, whether it's with like an egg or herbs or things like that, there are definite places that you want to pay more attention to. And those are, of course, always the back of the neck. That is where a lot of spirit attachments will happen, as well as between the shoulder blades. I also recommend across the shoulders as well, because that's where a lot of people carry their stress, their burdens in life, things like that are going to be across their shoulders. And of course, the entire head, shoulder, neck area is an area that's often attacked magically as well. So that's a kind of a whole area that we cover between the shoulder blades, the heart center, the palms of the hands, the genital region, as well as the bottoms of the feet. Mm-hmm. And especially when it comes to working with the genital area, a lot of people, especially women, will hold a lot of trauma there, or people who are queer will hold a lot of trauma there with their dysmorphia or with things that they've gone through in life. And also that is another area that will be attacked magically a lot. People's fertility and whatnot will come under fire. So these are areas that are important that when we are cleansing ourselves, that we really pay attention to.
I feel like a lot of portals too.
Oh yeah.
In those spaces. Can we talk about burning things?
Yeah, totally.
Things. Love to talk about burning things. Well, since we're talking about lumpia, I and the white lumpia is so fascinating to me as well. Mm. And I loved to, because that reminded me of what you talked about, like the heart straightening talk, because that was sort of part of the opening with the white lumpia.
Yeah. So the first time I came across a white fire lumpia, it was actually when I was a teenager and I had a friend who was kind of woo-woo, and I was like, yeah, awesome. And she was like, do you want to come over and help me cleanse my apartment? She was one of my mom's friends. She was kind of a family friend. So I was probably 15 around this time. So I'm like, yeah, totally. So I went over to her apartment and it was brand new. And so she wanted to just kind of clean it out energetically. And she was the one who showed me how to do this originally, where you take kind of like a dish. And a lot of times people will use Epsom salt that they put in and then like a splash of rubbing alcohol. And then you light it on fire by dropping a match into it. And that experience was very profound for me because it works. It immediately just kind of like clears the air. You can kind of feel it just sucking in and just eating up all the nastiness in the room. And so her and I would kind of just take that from room to room. And I don't know where she learned this. She just called it a fire cleanse. We'd go from room to room and then we'd pray Omane Padme Hum in each of the corners, which I think is Hindu. I don't know. I don't, to be honest, I'm not sure. Someone's writing me a hate email right now. It's fine. And then we would hang like red ribbon in all the corners. And so that was my first introduction to it. And then years later, like 3-4 years ago, Erica Buenaflor's book, Cleansing Rites of Curanderismo, came out, and highly recommend. She's a curandera, and her book is kind of detailing all of these different methods. And then I found that method in her book. Well, the salt and the fire and the alcohol part was in there. And I was like, oh, okay. So this wasn't just like a one-off thing that I'm going to see once in my entire life. And so she details very much the same process. You know, you have a dish or a container that's heat-proof. You put the Epsom salt in, and then you put in a little bit of the rubbing alcohol, and then ignite it. And what that does is it kind of gobbles up all the negativity. And so when you're doing something like a plática, people will sometimes release so much out of themselves, their frustration and, you know, with their family or something that they did that's really dark or things like that. And it can kind of just come out and sort of hang in the air. And you need to cleanse that out. And so a lot of the times you can take, you know, like a bowl with that setup in it and kind of set it in between. And when they're done, you know, you can ask them like, okay, are you ready to start again new? And then have them drop the match in to cleanse it all away, which is wonderful. And if anyone wants any more info, highly, highly recommend Erica Buenaflor's book, Cleansing Rites of Curanderismo. It's amazing. It was an entire game changer for me.
What a powerful moment. And I love that it's not done like after the person leaves. You know, you're like, okay, see you later, bye. And then people come out the door. You're like, ah, you know, get on out. Yeah. You know, it's a collective effort.
Mm-hmm. And you said you like to use sea salt and Florida water.
I do. And I'll sometimes kind of waffle back and forth. It really kind of depends on kind of what phase I'm going through. I do the same thing with candles, where like sometimes I'm really into like the different colored candles, and sometimes I'm like, nope, I'm only using white candles for like months at a time, and then I kind of want to use the colors again and things like that. So I do like to use like a good sea salt and then Florida water, because Florida water will ignite the same way that rubbing alcohol does, because it's alcohol based. So it's very much the same process.
Do you just buy what is it? Murray and Lehman. What is it? Murray and Lehman?
Yeah. Murray and Lehman.
Or have you attempted to make your own, or?
You know, I have attempted to make my own and I just don't like it as much. Like, you know, there's a reason why like the old staples are the way that they are. Like, you know, it's just, it's just better that way, you know?
Yeah.
Santa Muerte.
Oh.
I just... Okay, so I also follow you on TikTok as well. I love your treatment of this being. I love that you are reinforcing the respect and the boundaries that they require to have a relationship with. And I bring up social media because, you know, of course, things ebb and flow as far as like popularity. And for there was a time where that's like all the kids were making friends with Santa Muerte, you know, and I was like, I don't know. If
this is okay. Maybe we should think about this a little bit more.
Oh, OK. You know, so I love your discussion of caution. So I wanted to know how you came to that space. Do you have an active relationship with this specific spiritual being? You know, all those sorts of things.
Absolutely. So this has been the big divide on the book is my chapter on La Santa Muerte, because I have on one side, I have devotees sending me emails and messages going, thank you so much for this chapter. Like, you did right by her. It was what we really needed to hear at this point. People needed to be reminded that, you know, she is the spirit of death. On the other hand, I have people dedicating their entire TikToks to hating me. Which is wonderful.
It means that you're famous.
It means I'm famous. It's free publicity. And to be honest, they're just making themselves look psycho. But so my story with her starts about 3-4 years ago. I decided that I wanted to be a devotee. She had been coming to me in dreams. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. Right? Like, but I wanted to do it right. So I began talking to devotees. I began picking up books, getting recommendations for books, started reading about her, reading blogs on her. I talked to current devotees. I talked to former devotees. I talked to Mexican people who had interactions with her. I talked to people who were both Mexican devotees and American devotees. And I took classes on her as well. Right?
A lot of research.
A lot of research. And what I learned from that is that she has two very distinct sides. One of which is very loving, and the other one will beat your ass. she is also a wrathful spirit. She is death. And a lot of people think that that's like a metaphor. It's not. She is death itself. That is what she is. And a lot of the stories that I had been told from devotees, there were some that had very loving connections with her, which is something that I should have put into the book. I was on a bit of a mission in the book. But the vast majority of the stories that I heard were not good stories. People had not had a good time with her. And the thing that I began to realize with a lot of these stories about things that had gone wrong with her were people who weren't prepared to give her the devotion that she required or the respect that she required. A lot of times people met with this wrathful part of her when they just saw her as kind of like an ATM, like, oh, like I, because there's all these stories about her miraculously giving people just everything that they ask for because she's just so loving that she's just giving over everything. And people get it mixed up that it is La Santa Muerte and it's not the Santa Claus, right? Because people like have this idea that she's just there just to bless them with everything. And she's just wonderful and like all this stuff, which some people do find, but those are also the people who are the most devoted to her and the most respectful to her. But when people roll up and are like, yeah, just gimme, 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 it does not go well for them. And so what I wanted to do with this chapter is to remind people of who she is and what she's capable of, because I'm seeing on social media all these people like, oh, everything you've heard about her is just lies. She's my madrina and she's just nothing but love. And I get messages from people, a lot of messages from people that are like, oh, I decided like yesterday on a whim that I'm now a devotee and I'm asking her for stuff and it's like my candles won't light anymore. I don't know what's happening. I keep trying to light them. And I'm like, because you need to build a relationship with her. You need to slow down. You need to respect her and be devoted to her. This is not something where you just start lighting candles and start asking for things. That is when you get, you know, in Mexican culture, we call it la chancla, where you get spanked with the shoe. What I wanted to do in my book, because I'm seeing so many people, because this happens a lot, when a spirit becomes popular, they take away the bad things because that's not good for PR, right? They just kind of sweep that under the rug. And then her story begins to change too, about where she comes from, what she is, who she is, things like that. I've seen books being written recently by non-Mexicans that for some reason have a section about her in it. And they're completely changing her story about who she is and where she comes from and stuff like that. And that's where we run into danger. So my intention with this chapter in the book was to remind people, at the end of the day, you are dealing with death. Yeah. And you can romanticize that as much as you want. You can talk about how beautiful death is. But at the end of the day, death is death. And you need to respect that. And especially if you're going to be calling it into your home. So that's what I really wanted to kind of do with the chapters, remind people that they need to approach her in a respectful, devoted manner, and not like she's an ATM or some fluffy, you know, neo-pagan triple goddess, whatever, like, scenario. You know, she is death. And that's something that I really wanted to drive home for people.
I think we kind of talked a little bit about this the last time we had you on too, like how you really, really have to tread graciously.
You do. I'm wondering, and I don't know the answer to this, but I am wondering, I don't know where this like collective, I'm just going to ask and not really care, comes from, you know? It's like they see Santa Muerte as money bags and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of it comes from capitalism and like commercialism. And so, you know, back in the day, you know, this idea that everyone can do witchcraft is very new. It's very modern. In many cultures, you had to show that you had a gift, or in my culture, we call it the don, which is like a gift or a special quality that allows you to do it. Until people found out that there's money to be made in witchcraft. And then suddenly everyone can do this, because once everyone can do it, then more people are going to buy the book. They're going to buy the product. If you say, oh, well, only some people can do this, then people probably aren't going to mess with it. But if you say everyone can do this and people are like, wait, great, I'm going to go do this. And so they go out, then they buy it. And then once that starts to happen, then it becomes a money-making game. How can we make this more marketable? The way we can make this more marketable is by saying that every wrathful goddess is actually a loving mother, which is very sexist, by the way, the way that we pigeonhole these powerful female spirits into the loving mother category, and saying things like, oh yeah, there are no rules in magic. There's no consequences to magic. It's for everybody. It's to make money. Because if we say, no, you can actually get hurt doing this, you should be careful doing this, then less people are likely to show up to it. And the same thing happens with these spirits, like La Santa Muerte. Oh yeah, buy my statues. She's just a loving mother. Nothing will happen. Like, absolutely. Like, there's nothing wrong. That's very scary, because people are prioritizing money making over truth.
Yeah.
And that gets dangerous. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Put her on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
There it is, folks. There it is. Capitalism is the worst.
It's here among us.
It sure is. And boy, is it a bummer.
It really is. Anyway, buy my book.
Yeah, right?
While we're here.
Come on, guys.
I love the section on working with novenas and reading the black smoke, reading the white smoke, reading the cloudiness, reading how the candlelight flickers. So many people talk about what happens when a candle explodes, and how to you know, properly dispose, how to sustainably, you know, consciously dispose of your material. Oh, and I love like putting the holes that you've talked about, like getting your screwdriver out, maybe even drill, and like...
I'm sitting right here with it, actually, because I do these at my altar space, because I have nowhere else to do my podcast. I'm sitting here with my little screwdriver and all my magical tools. We have all kinds of stuff going on here. But so the novena section, it was really important, because not only is that a big part of the magic that I like to do, but it's a big part of our culture as Mexicans. You know, it's what we, it's a vehicle for a large part of our magic. That's do a few things. First of all, I mean, candles have always been very magical, you know, in all cultures, you know, we have something to do with either lamps or candles or things like that. But also Mexico being colonized by Spain and being so Catholic, that was magic that we could kind of do in plain sight that didn't look, you know, like witchcraft, you know, it looked like a Catholic practice. Back in the day, a lot of our novenas were kind of saints. And then it wasn't until I want to say like the 80s that we started seeing ones that were like road opener or come to me or things like that. Those started coming out later, but were a very welcome addition to kind of the arsenal that we see. And so I just adore that style of magic because you can find a candle for just about anything. I just love it. And when we do this work, people will approach it to varying degrees. A lot of times people will just hold their candle, say a prayer, and then light it and call it a day. And I find that to be very valid. And in all honesty, I do kind of like that approach a little bit better. I find it to be very honest. I find it to be very kind of pure in a way of just kind of being like, I just need some help. And then lighting a candle. And the candle really symbolizes a lot of things. You know, it's kind of, we're bringing light to the world. We are bringing illumination to the things that we need. You know, it's a burned offering for spirit, you know, whether that's, you know, La Santa Muerte or it's Guadalupe or, you know, any saint, whatever it is, it's an offering to them that we burn. But a lot of times people will take it a step further than that. And they will add in things like oils and herbs and stones, things like that. A lot of times people too will write a petition and then kind of like roll it up real tight and then stuff it into one of the holes in the candle. It's really common to see that. I don't do that because sometimes they light on fire and, you know, there are things that I want to do in this life and burning my house down is not one of them. So I do a lot of praying over them to kind of charge them with that. Because in my way of working with them, what I like to do is I like to kind of fill them with the energy of my intention, as well as a lot of prayers. And so the way that I see it is that as I light it and it's slowly burning down, these prayers are continuing to kind of unravel and go up to the divine. It's a little bit like if I tape recorded myself saying a bunch of prayers over and over and over again, and then kind of slowly played them back over a matter of days. Is this kind of the way that I see it sort of working? And everyone, of course, is going to approach this a little bit different, but that's kind of in my world how it works. So I like to really fill them with this sort of intention of what it is that I'm asking for, along with all of my prayers that are also an offering. So, you know, I say these prayers as an offering to them. And then so slowly that kind of energy kind of unravels and goes up to them as it's burnt.
And I loved like the divination around reading the candle when it's done, like the different rings that can indicate, you know, maybe 3 weeks, three days, 3 months. The one thing that I was like, oh, what is, I was kind of curious about were the knots in the wick.
Yeah. So have you ever, because you see this every so often where you'll light it and the wick will just turn into just a big ball of just crusty, whatever it is, just like a big knot full of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of almost sits there for a while and the fire has to work on it and work on it and work on it until after a while it kind of breaks apart. And so when I see that happening in a novena when it's burning, that lets me know that there is an obstacle that the candle has had to stop and chew on for a while and break down. And I can tell kind of where on this person's journey they're going to sort of run into that obstacle based on where it happens in the burn. So if the wick immediately does that right off, I'm like, okay, so like a lot of your trouble is just simply with getting started versus like something that's way down the road. And so that really kind of lets me know like where the magic, so I always see the novena as kind of like walking down a road ahead of me, sort of. And you can see kind of like where along it's going to run into trouble, where it's had to stop and do something. And so depending on where it has to stop, the novena can only go so far. Same thing with like black smoke. So black smoke is often the sort of idea that negativity is being removed from a situation. So for instance, if I'm doing like a blockbuster candle to just remove one obstacle out of my path and the glass turns black like about halfway down and then clears up, that lets me know that the candle had to spend most of its time just chewing on that thing and chewing on it and chewing on it and chewing on it before it could actually get anything to open up, which means that that was a lot of time that isn't necessarily spent on the opening portion. So then we might have to do another one, or we might have to do a cleansing and then try another one in order to do that. So it's just kind of, it's information, right? People see black soot on their candle and they're like, oh, the devil's coming to get me. And I'm like, no, I promise it's not. It's just information. It's just letting you know. And For any candle makers who are listening to this, because I got into so much trouble on TikTok, I posted one video about black soot on your candle, and I had like 100 candle makers like, that just means you need to trim your wick, or you know, there's chemicals in your candle. And I'm like, all my people's spiritual traditions are trash. I know, I'm sorry. But so yes, I know, you should definitely trim your wick. Always look for mundane causes before you read too much into it, of course. But you can definitely see the signs in the burn.
You always trim your wick.
Leslie. That sounds so dirty. I can't.
You're welcome. No, seriously though, when you are working your novena candles, do you always trim them?
I do, especially because the ones that you get from the Botanica will have like this 3-inch long, huge wick on it, and I'm like, ooh, no, that's how we die. So I do trim it then, but I don't smother them and then relight them over and again. So that's pretty much the only time that I do the trimming.
Yeah, me too.
You got a candle trimmer, don't you?
I sure do. Mm-hmm. I do, with a really long handle too.
That sounds dirty too.
I know.
When the candles break, because it's happened to me a couple times, I'm sure it's happened to a lot of folks. You've mentioned in your book, so we all know, like I've always intuitively felt it's a great thing. You've broken through something, it's overflowing, you know, but you also said something about other forces working against it.
Whenever we're reading our candles, you know, whether it's during the burn or after the burn, you know, we're reading the glass, whenever we're doing this, we always have to frame it by saying, what was this candle for, right? So if this candle was for, if it was a blockbuster, right? You're trying to blast apart an obstacle and your candle shatters. That's probably really good, right? That's like a breakthrough, right? If it's a protection candle though, and it shatters, that will concern me, because that means that I have, because you don't want your protection to break. You don't want your protection to ever kind of, you know, shatter into 100 pieces or crack in any sort of way. And of course, again, we have to take mundane factors into this. You know, did you not trim your wick and your flame was huge? Or same thing too with like the black smoke. I once put powdered cinnamon on my candle and I thought that the devil was after me. Like the whole thing turned black. It got so smoky, I had to take it outside. And then I think it was Temperance Alden posted like the next day. She's like, pro tip, don't put powdered cinnamon on your candles. So you always have to frame how you're reading it based on what the intention was. So sometimes the breaking is really good, and sometimes it's concerning. And either way, that's when kind of divination comes in. If we're not sure, something happened during our spell, we need to stop, check in, pull some cards, throw some coins, whatever it is that we do for divination, do that and just simply check in. And also check in with how it feels to you as well. Like, did you suddenly get a huge bad feeling and then your candle like exploded? Or were you like, wow, this feels great, and then suddenly it explodes and you're like, ah, yes, breakthrough. Like, I can finally breathe again, you know, or things like that. You know, these are all things we need to take into consideration.
Another thing that I found fascinating is water glass magic.
Yeah.
I love it. I would love to know, you know, and I'm sure our listeners would love to know more about this water glass magic. Ooh, and the other thing, because this is one of the spells that you could do, the laundering, the blue laundering, mm-hmm. like the, which basically I think whitens whites, but it comes out in like a blue color. You even talked about putting those in a bath as well to repel the evil eye or create more of a protective sort of energy around you.
So in our culture, And in many cultures, salt is not just for purification. Salt can also be used for hexing, cursing, things like that. They call it, you know, getting salted. Or you'll find candles too, that where the translation isn't totally right. And so it'll just be a candle that's against saltiness. And I think that's hilarious. And I love that. I'm like, yes, be against that saltiness. But so a lot of people, to prevent this or to combat this, will place glasses of water normally like in their kitchen window or like up high on top of a cupboard or beside their bed in order to filter out the negativity or sort of prevent the salting from happening. But they'll also use it for all kinds of different things too. There's a lot of, you know, hechizos or spells where you take like a glass of water and you put a plate on top of it and you flip the whole thing over to do a reversal work. And so we find glasses of water all over the place. The blue water is something that we find a lot, especially with like African and African American traditions that we have through like the Caribbean and the South, where putting laundry bluing, which is something that we can find, I just get it at like Safeway. It's in the laundry section. It's Mrs. Stewart is a kind that I use, non-toxic, very easy to use. And what it's for is for the laundry. So when you have like a load of sheets or whites, it's a very mild dye. So it just tints them blue ever so slightly, which gives the effect of making them look more white, as opposed to when they turn kind of yellow, the blue kind of makes them stand out more as looking more white. So that's something that would get added to a lot of laundry. And back in these traditions, this was something that was very easily accessible. This was something that a lot of people had, you know, nearby. And so using the laundry bluing and putting it in water, sort of in a lot of these traditions, almost seems to sort of enhance the natural properties of water by, you know, making it blue, which is a very like, you know, water-centric color is the blue. And so by using this and doing the blue water, it can do a lot of things. A lot of times people will put the blue water on their table when they're doing psychic readings because it's a good conduit for spirit, as well as it chases away kind of bad spirits at the same time. So there's a lot of different uses for it.
I've seen people put novenas into a bowl of blue water. Is that kind of like a similar idea?
Yeah. Okay. So sometimes you put like novenas into like a bowl of water, something like that. Either like I'll do that if I'm doing like cleansing work where I want to incorporate kind of this power of water or the spirit of water or as an amplifier as well, because water does that so beautifully where it kind of does that light bending things and things look bigger, you know, underwater and whatnot. So it does a great job of that amplification as well. So there's a bunch of reasons why you'd want to do that.
I gotta get some. It just feels like a wonderful, again, and I love that like all-purpose practical magic. What's at the grocery store is also available for you. I've always had this like dream of doing like a witchcraft grocery list.
Right.
I love that. Yeah.
Off topic of the book, but always on topic. Do you have any ghost stories for us?
She's a magnet for spookiness.
I love it. We got like so much feedback on the one that you shared with our listeners last time, mm-hmm. about the family and the guy that was like eating raw meat. And yeah. So, I mean, not to say that you have to top it, but just, do you feel like sharing any spooky things with us this time?
Yeah, I always have stories. It's been so interesting because COVID has really kind of put a damper on being able to go to these places, but it's also forced me and the team to learn how to fix a haunting from miles and miles and miles away.
Ooh, that's interesting.
So that's been a very interesting process. And so I'm trying to take that as a blessing. I've also been feeling that the spirit world wants me to get back to work. I very recently had a negative entity that I'm very kind of familiar with, one that I've ran across quite a few times, show up just like in a house that I was in, just like a friend's house that I was visiting. Just like showed up in their room and was just like at the, cause like there's like a long hallway in their house. And at the very end of it is like their open doorway and then like their bed. And he just shows up sitting on it. And I'm like, what are you doing here? And at first I'm like, you know, maybe this is my anxiety. I don't know. Like, but then my dog is like also staring directly at it too. And I'm like, okay, all right. And it was so very odd because it wasn't, they weren't like attached to anything in the house. They just showed up. And I honestly think it was kind of a challenge that was like, what? So you're just not doing this anymore? And I'm like, no, I am. It's just, I haven't been vaccinated until recently. Now I'm coming for you. But this spirit, did I talk about Clyde on the last one?
I don't think so.
So yep. This is a spirit that I come across frequently in this work. And I didn't realize that Clyde was known by other names, things like that, because it was just the name I gave him. I named them just things like Bob, Ted, Phil, Clyde, because number one, it just helps me categorize them in my brain. And number two, it also helps them be less scary. Right. Because yeah. It's very, you know, easy to be afraid of something called like Bathsheba or like, you know, whatever. But if it's like Bob or Ted, like, you know, you're not really afraid of it. Like, so that's a nice way to kind of frame it. Exactly. Calling Karen.
All right, Karen.
Yeah, exactly. So
we're all.
So I had actually come across this entity once, and that's a story I'll tell in just a second. And then again. And then again, and then again. And I was like, oh my God, like, is this just our area? What is going on? So I Googled spirit of tall, thin man wearing a top hat. And boom, 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 all these hits come up immediately about top hat man. People have been seeing top hat man for years and years and years. He's a very common spirit that runs around. And I'm like, oh, okay. So this is a thing. Like, this isn't just me that's experiencing this. So I had been called, this was 6, maybe 7 years ago. I had been called to, we'll just say a bar in Portland, because that definitely does not narrow it down.
Not at all.
Not at all. And they had been, and so on my team, when we go to resolve a haunting, we're there. I think the longest I've been at the house was 4 hours. We like to get in, do the work, get out. So when my team told me, they're like, yeah, we're going to have you check out this place. We've been working on it for like 6, 7 years at this point. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, that's what is going on with this place? Is there a gate to hell underneath it? Which, I mean, a little bit, but we'll talk about that later. But so I go there. And of course, I don't know anything before I get to a place. I'm often just kind of given an address and I just sort of show up. And so I get there and it's a bar and I meet the manager and it's during the day where the bar isn't open. So we're in there alone. I have a motto, which is paranormal starts with P, which means you need to go to the little investigator's room before anything starts. Because if something jumps out at you and scares you, you don't want to wet yourself. So I go do my business. And this is a Portland.
Skip over that.
Yeah. It's a little pearl of wisdom there for you. Paranormal starts with P.
Empty your bladder first.
Yep. definitely do that. So I'm in there and, you know, it's a Portland bar bathroom, which means it's very sketchy. And I'm finished. I'm washing my hands and there's this little mirror on the wall in front of me. And I look up into the mirror and there's this man standing behind me. And he's very tall and he's very thin. And he looks kind of like in the face, at least the first time meeting him, he looked very much kind of like Kurt Cobain did near the end. He had kind of like that long kind of stringy blonde hair. And he was wearing a top hat and like a tux, like a suit and tails, the gloves, the whole nine yards, very dapper. And I'm like, oh, hi. And then he just kind of goes away. And I'm like, okay. And I come out of the bathroom and I have a very expressive face. And it's I'm always making faces out loud that I don't know I'm making. And the manager sees me come out and she goes, you saw him in the mirror, didn't you?
Oh, snap.
And I was like, I did. He's like, he likes to do that to people. A lot of people have been reporting seeing that. And I'm like, interesting. Okay. So I'm like, you know, all right, information. So let's go. And so I don't, at this point, this is the first time I've ever met this spirit. And so I start going around kind of the place, kind of exploring, and I go upstairs into kind of a green room. And anyone who's familiar with Portland green rooms, this will probably give it away. But upstairs, there's literally a hole in the wall that you have to crawl through to get into the green room, which is like this little tiny room with like a couch in it and all this stuff. And I'm like, I go in there and I'm like, number one, people have been using drugs and Ouija boards in here at the same time. And I'm like, well, that's part of your problem here. And I kind of step out of the hole, kind of like into the main area upstairs, and he's back. And I'm like, hey, like, I always try and have a conversation with them first, like, you know, let's just, you know, do this simply. You just leave and we'll all go about our day. They never take me up on that offer, but I like to always give them the chance. And so I tell him, I'm like, hey, and I'm talking to him. And as I'm talking to him, I'm realizing there's something wrong. That his skin doesn't seem to fit him right. And the only way that I can describe it is like in the first Men in Black movie, the farmer guy who like has the alien like go into his body and then he has to like pull his skin into place so he looks like a normal human. I very much suddenly got this kind of sense that he was wearing like a human skin suit. And I kind of go, oh, you're not a human spirit. And as soon as I said that, it all kind of dissolves. And his eyes turn like bright yellow, and then he gives me this smile. And this smile is like way bigger than it should have been. And he has like rows and rows of like shark teeth.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, that's exactly what I said. I was like, no, I am not having it. Like, don't do that. I hate that. And then I was like, and then he kind of like fades out and I'm like, I am coming to get you. So I'm like, I hate that. So that was my first kind of encounter with Clyde. And then after that, I started to realize he always shows up very dapper. He loves a suit and tails. He loves a hat. It's not always a top hat. Sometimes it's like a bowler hat or a fedora. But I find that what gives him away the most is the teeth or the mouth area. There's something wrong in that area. Either they're pointed or... One person I was working with had encountered him several times and he was missing his lower jaw. So it always kind of, that's always tends to be sort of his giveaway. Was that.
Does he usually, like each time does he show up in a human form still? Mm-hmm. Or
yeah. He kind of tries to be a little human-y sometimes. I think that at that point, he was trying to see if he could fool me and just have me just be like, oh yeah, just go into the light and then leave. And so he could do whatever he wanted. But when I was talking with him, I'm like, something is not right here. Because like, you know, I have ran across, you know, human spirits that are very well-dressed, you know, whatever. But his, there was something wrong with it.
So... how did you get him to leave that space, or he just kind of roams?
He likes to show up in places. A lot of dark entities will be attracted to people who are experiencing a mental health crisis because they like the energy. Those things tend to create a lot of fear, a lot of confusion, sadness, things like that, which are all things that they feed on. So I find that he likes to kind of hang out in those homes. And aggravate those issues. And I've also found that there's not just one of him. It's a type of spirit that I call a Clyde. So there's many of them. And they all kind of have their own different kind of style and kind of method of going about it. But these are all things that can be removed with normal cleansing methods, you know, whether it's salt water or cleansing smoke or whatever it is. You just have to mean it enough and be persistent enough that it shoves them out.
Get out of there.
Yeah, go on now. Get.
Creepy. All those teeth. It's that. I can see it. I can absolutely see it in my head.
I don't know. The yellow eyes got me. I'm not down for that.
Yeah, no, you're not into the yellow eyes.
Get those out of here.
Well, thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Jane from Canada writes, do you have any good rituals for letting go of a piece of yourself? My glasses snapped right in half the other day. I have another pair, but these ones were just me, you know? I was initially sad about it, but then I felt like it was something saying that I had grown past this part of me, like a snake shedding its skin. I'm a Scorpio, so this totally doesn't scare me. I see it as an opportunity for growth. How can I say farewell with fondness to the old me, while welcoming the change that is already present. Thanks, as always, for the wonderful podcast. Thank you, Jane.
Well, you know me, I love to burn my shoes. That's what I always do.
You burn your shoes?
I do a big fire and I'll, like, yeah, because I usually wear, like clogs. Uh-huh. So they're already, like, you know, half wood anyway. So I usually just throw them in a fire. And
I love that you just showed us your foot. You know, like clogs.
Speaking of the old boot, right? Yeah.
Awesome.
But I do. I love to have like an annual burn of things that were, but I think burning glasses might not be a good thing.
Oh, I don't think you can. I mean, yeah. The ones that I'm wearing right now are metal and plastic. So, mm-hmm. You know, the metal.
I would try.
You can't burn my glasses.
I'm not going to burn your glasses.
So in that case, So in my culture, we definitely believe that we can sort of lose pieces of ourselves or sort of gift them to other people unconsciously, or I guess maybe to objects. And to learn more about that, Erica Buenaflor's second book, Curanderismo, Soul Retrieval, highly recommend. For this, I would definitely kind of go the burning route. I am going to say that. But first, what I would do is I would sort of take them and hold them. And I like to do a lot of magic sort of by energy and by will, not necessarily with this herb and that candle and things like that, but actually just doing the magic yourself, which is something that I like to do. So I would kind of hold them and, you know, center yourself, of course, and kind of hold my hand over them and slowly kind of pull out of them all of the energy that they had collected from places you had been, things you had done, people you had met, the memories that you, because you have been viewing your world through them for so long. And so to take that time to sort of go over these memories and places and people and things like that, that these glasses have accompanied you with, and kind of pull that out of them and kind of see it as like a little ball of light. And kind of take that into yourself as a reminder that even though the glasses are gone, you still hold these things. These things still travel with you. And then I would thank them for being good glasses, because they sound like they were good glasses. And then I would put them in the fire and go get something different that maybe reflects the new you.
Applause.
Beautiful.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that is, you bring up a very good point. These aren't shoes. These are like something you're seeing through, which is a huge part of your soul. So yeah, really honoring that way.
Incorporating them into an altar of some kind.
Ooh, repurposing.
So, yeah, repurposing. Yeah. So a lot of us like to hold on to past memories and treasures and things, but we tend to just kind of like, they just kind of end up corners and pockets of our house or like closets, you know, and you never actually like see these things anymore. And so to me, like when I end up moving, I come across these things and I'm like, why am I even holding on to this band jacket from high school? Like, why do I have this thing? You know, it doesn't have any meaning any longer. But glasses are small and they're portable, and in this specific instance, these glasses really represented a big part of Jane. And so I really love this idea of creating a mini altar in your house, not making it a working altar, not making it a part of your ancestor altar, but make a small altar in your home that represents past Jane. And, you know, having your glasses as a part of that, having maybe a bottle of your favorite perfume or scent that you used to use, that really like your signature smell, but now you're not using that anymore. Maybe, you know, a photograph of yourself that you really love from like that past time frame. Because, you know, honoring ourselves means honoring our past, of course. We do that in different ways. And I think this would be a really like creative way of like grounding that past energy. Mm-hmm. And then you can give it gratitude because like past Jane put you in this current place. Yeah. And that's fucking rad.
Yeah.
You know?
I love that.
I also have a treasure chest where I keep these things. And so I'll wrap it, like I'll wrap my favorite, you know, teddy bear or something that I don't want to get rid of that still kind of holds that energy. And I'll sort of wrap it up safely and then tuck it away in this like ancestral cedar chest that I have. So I also feel like that's a nice place to, like, you know, you've heard some people call them like a hope chest or something, yeah, like when you're growing up and you put all the hopes that you have for your future. But like same thing as an altar, but like you have,
look at you.
See?
Joshua just pointed to his hope chest, or right?
Is yeah, I inherited it from family, and it's full of all of our, like my grandmother's wedding dresses in it, all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah, like, so beginning to create some kind of a sacred treasure chest where you can kind of keep those things that are still very like special to you. Because I was also thinking about like putting in a box and burying it, but then it's like, yeah, but what if you move from that place? Like it feels like it still needs to be portable,
right?
Yeah.
Or just burned, you know, or just completely released. Oh, that's interesting. I just got a whiff of a very specific perfume. Interesting.
Ooh, the spirits are with you.
Who's here?
Hello.
Very fresh. Thank you, Jane. Yeah, that's a great question. Stephanie from Kansas City, who writes, do you know or have any workbooks, question series, courses, or other resources that help begin the shadow work process of getting over a relationship? For clarity, I don't mean a recent breakup. I mean getting over an old trauma-ridden relationship I've recently been coming to terms with.
There's always a lot to unpack in those. And one thing I always like to start with is that anytime people bring the terms shadow work and trauma into the same arena together, I always like to pump the brakes, because in modern days, people have sort of decided that shadow work is here to be a replacement for therapy, and it's here to heal our trauma and things like that. And that's not what shadow work is here for. Our shadow work is here to help us get to know ourselves, especially the parts of ourselves that we reject or the parts of ourselves that we don't necessarily like or want to see, and to understand those, learn from them, and then kind of integrate them. And so when it comes to this relationship, I would look back and of course, they had their part in it. They did what they did, which caused problems. But look at yourself during that relationship. What were you doing in it? And what does that tell you? You know, were you someone who participated in the toxicity? Maybe there's something we can learn there. Or maybe when the toxicity began to happen, did you shrink yourself? And what does that say? What can we learn from that? And what kind of And these things aren't necessarily bad things that we did. These are things that we did in order to survive this situation. These are things that we felt were right, or things that we did to try and defend ourselves. And so looking back at how we were in the relationship and how we dealt with it, we can learn about ourselves. And sometimes we find things that we really like and sometimes we don't. But those are pieces of ourselves that also need love and attention and healing. And you can ask yourself too, now that I've seen maybe this pattern or this reaction, do I still do that? Where did that come from? Did that start in this relationship or did that start somewhere else? And then we usually find that those things started when we were kids. And these are things that are just children inside of us that are trying to be okay still. And so when we can kind of backtrack it to where it began, and send love to that part of ourselves, and then we can sort of understand ourselves better and integrate that self into us. So I would forget about the other person, at least in this particular scenario, and what they did, because yeah, we can go on for days and days about what they did, but to see what we can learn about ourselves from it and where your strengths are, because a lot of these things are strengths too that we didn't know we even had. And even though you went through this traumatic thing, you survived and are on the other side, and that's beautiful. And now you find out why you were able to survive.
Yeah, I think an add-on that can be helpful in kind of arriving at this process, at least that, you know, work that I've done around very, very similarly this question in my own life, is I will like visually travel back to that place, have a conversation with that version of myself, have a conversation or just hold myself when I was feeling the most vulnerable or sad or hurt or not acknowledged or, you know, out of control even, and just really like hold that person. So I really find for me recently that a lot of the work that I've done around, you know, also like inner child healing, which can come in with this as well, is to visually travel back to that place. And sometimes what I'll do, because it can be very jarring, I'll like wrap myself up in a blanket, make sure, even have a heating pad nearby, make sure I'm really warm and comfortable and tucked in to kind of do this work, because you want to make sure that your physical body feels safe when you're going back to those moments. So visually traveling back to that space and bringing some of that stuff up. And then also the other thing is future self writing, you know, self in this current space, writing a letter back to that person like, hey, here's like where you get to. Here's like what you go through. And here's, you know, in this physical space now, this is what you're beginning to realize that this person taught you, or this person was able to share about yourself, or that you were able to realize and acknowledge about yourself as you went through this experience. So like astrally and then like physically writing that letter feels really, has been helpful for me dealing with the same kind of experience.
That's beautiful.
I have a little plant ally that may aid this listener, the tree hawthorn, and there's tons of different varieties of hawthorns. So Stephanie, I'm sure you'll be able to find one of the multitudes out there. Hawthorn is a fantastic plant ally when you want to do any kind of ritual work or spiritual healing around trauma. Hawthorn has these really beautiful thorns on them. Some of them are very long and kind of sparse and kind of peppered all throughout the tree. And then there's the Washington hawthorn, which is hella thorny. Holy crap. Lots of thorns all over it. And so if you can find a hawthorn tree locally, I would highly recommend starting to visit it and talking to it and telling it your story, specifically around this relationship. With time, maybe that tree will allow you to harvest a thorn that then can be a protective talisman as you travel down the journey to healing this specific experience. And then I have a book recommendation, which has nothing to do with magic or shadow work, but I find Jeffrey Marsh's book called How to Be You, just a beautiful piece of writing specifically focused on healing yourself through traumatic experiences. So it's great. Yes. Also, Jeffrey Marsh is a force on the Instagram and TikTok. So if you're looking for inspiration, this person is just fabulous. And
you introduced me to Jeffrey, and I am just, my heart overflows with this person's incredible spirit.
Mm-hmm. Do you know Jeffrey, Josh?
I don't, but I am actually looking him up on the Instagram right now as we're talking. Good.
Yeah. Jeffrey is just, they do a lot of education around gender and just general self-talk, you know, and their little wheels or reels, their reels on Instagram are just so great. And they always come up as, you know, whenever I need a little pick me up. So I find Jeffrey being able to channel spirit in a big way. Yeah. So
yes, I do know who this person is. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They have such a wonderful energy.
Oh yeah. A plus.
Yeah. That's a great recommendation, Allison. Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
There's always room for you here whenever you want to come on there, Professor Cross.
Thank you so much. I love being here with you both. You are both just so wise. I love speaking with you. You always have such interesting things to say that I'm always like, oh, that is so brilliant. I just love it. So thank you for having me here.
Can you please share with us, and you've got a podcast, share all of the ways that our listeners can find you.
Absolutely. Yes. All the things. So yes, I do have a podcast. I have started it since the last time we spoke. It is one that I run with my friend Britton Boyd, and we have a great time doing it. We are both, you know, dirty Oregonian witches. We're both folk practitioners. So it's a lot of peeing in jars and handfuls of dirt and chicken feet and all that stuff. So it's a lot of fun. The podcast is called Invoking Witchcraft. You can find us anywhere podcasts are found. And you can find us on Instagram as well at Invoking Witchcraft. You can also find me on Instagram at Oregon Wood Witch with a little underscores between. That is where you can find pretty much everything that I'm doing, stay up to date on classes that I'm offering. You can hire me for spell work or readings, or I do also do spiritual coaching. So if you're having trouble learning something like, you know, the tarot, or you're having trouble with a spell or something, you can sign up for time with me and I'll sit down and talk with you, and we can discuss kind of what's going on. A lot of people come to me where they're like, I feel like I might be cursed or, you know, something or other. And then we can just, you know, talk through it, and I can give you kind of information as far as what I would do, or kind of help teach you new skills if you need that as well. So that's something that I like to do. So you can get in touch with me there at Oregon Wood Witch. You can find my book, American Brujeria. It is on everywhere books are sold. It is in Barnes and Nobles. It is Walmart is carrying it. It's everywhere. So you can find it there. Be sure to leave a review, especially if you like it. Be sure to leave a review. And yeah, it's pretty much me. One day I will have a website. I've been working on this website for like 2 years. One day I'll actually have it up and running for everybody. But for now, that is the best place to find me is Instagram.
The Ask a Hag podcast is produced by Donna Kyler. Listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever else you listen. You can be part of the podcast too. Leave us a voice message on the Anchor FM app and we'll play it on the show. And don't forget to review us on Apple Podcasts. We love 5 stars so much. You can find this podcast on Instagram at ask.a.hag or at askahagpodcast.com. Thank you, Joshua, so much.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.